No one's asked, but he's left the torch going from. My minion abolished Bahab years ago. The 530 minion old Rivka is the only minion that does not say Slichas for years already. And you should know how many Rabbanim are after. Two-thirds of the minion are Musmachim from YU or JTS from when it was still fairly frum, etc., etc. Okay, today is May 7th, 2012, and we're finishing up Das Torah today. Again, fascinating material, and I'll let my hair down. I'll explain something. I may be right, I may be wrong, but at least we can throw out a thought. Anyway, last week was a very important shiur, and I have to say I wrote a letter of support and protest, probably for the first time in many, many years, because I gave up writing letters. But what happened was that there was an editorial in Torah Tidbits by Phil Chinovsky, a very beautiful editorial in honor of Yom HaTzmut. And this week there was a feedback. Rabbi Zev Leff took issue with him, and that's all I had to see. I wrote a two-page letter defending Phil 100% and very strongly. So I mentioned what I've mentioned in class many times, that if Zev Leb's Rebbeim are correct, there wouldn't be a state of Israel. Who can have sovereignty before the Jewish state? And let's not forget what happened in Beit Medrash Elyon in 1948. Mein Rebbe hat mir gesagt, das kenne ich sein, And God works in mysterious ways, but we have to wake up and read what God is telling us as per the Rav's drasha. Anyway, I wrote a letter of support. Last week we raised some interesting ideas, and I have to say that that idea that Zerach V'Haftik throws out is an idea that has a lot of validity to it. And it may very well be, and it doesn't have to be that way today, and it will not be that way. It's already ameliorating itself. It's like dedication to Torah and dedication to the State of Israel contradict each other. They're in competition with each other. And he writes a very interesting analysis of Rav Aaron Kotler. He also, what I didn't say last week, which I should have said, is that he describes Rav Aaron Kotler that he was very strong, you couldn't budge him. It's given an action, if I can use the Yiddish, he was like an ox. And that is true. And that's why Rav Aaron Kotler accomplished what he did. People who are very strong move a world. The Rav was not like that. The Rav was not like Rav Aaron Kotler in personality. The years had a great impact on the Rav and made him infinitely more flexible. Could be his wife as well, Boston, the reality of his life. But the Rav, on one hand, did not accomplish what Rav Aaron did. He came to YU, was already a going institution. YU continues after him. And as Tova Lichtenstein says so insightfully, YU today is very different than the Rav's gestalt. In other words, the image being cast by the Rosh Yeshiva and Reitz is not the image of the Rav. It's very, very different. But nevertheless, the Rav accomplished a great deal, but that's indirectly accomplished through his teachings, through his writings, through his Shayurim. In other words, for hundreds of years now, the Rav's literary and his Shayurik, if I can use a new word I just coined, his influence will become greater and greater. Whereas Rav Aaron Kotler's influence basically will remain, as years move on, limited to what he established in Lakewood. And Lakewood, of course, became a shame. It becomes more than just Lakewood. It's a concept. But I hold 1,000 years from now, the Rav's influence will be greater. But B'chayayim, there's no question that Rav Aaron was an action, and he built, and he didn't compromise, and you couldn't budge him. And Zerach V'Haftik, who knew him well, hit the nail on the head. And I can tell you, in private conversation with Rav Aaron, so I was telling him all that B'nai did for me, but his answer was, "Das ist noch nicht der ganze Emes." I believe I'm quoting him syllable by syllable. It's still not the entire truth. Okay, listen, Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael, and I'll come back to it later. Yeah, yes, Yitzhak, what did you want to say?
Part of the Rabbi, your was allergic to him for his lifetime. It was his own fault. He came to the yeshiva in 1941, is that right?
41, May of 41.
Can you imagine what would have happened if every Tuesday night he would have given a class of Parshat HaShavua for 40 years instead of going to Maria? Now, he would have influenced all the college students.
Yeah,
but he didn't do that. He decided, I don't want to get into why, because I don't know why. I have all kinds of theories that I shouldn't even say that.
Okay, well, first of all, he didn't go to Maria right away. Maria begins in the early 50s. I have in my book the exact date. I think it's 54. Maria was a very interesting phenomenon. The inside story is very simple. A bunch of balabatim on the west side, mainly the diamond crowd, and basically Galiciana. There were a few Litvakim there, and there were a few even from Sfardim, from Egypt, who were in the diamond trade. And they gathered around the Rav and built Maria for the Rav. And the Rav gave a shiur there every Tuesday night. But you are downplaying the importance of that shiur because you don't realize all the rabbis in the greater New York area came to that shiur. That's number one. Number two, it gave a chance for women to come as well. And you had Lamdaniyat, the Pomeranz sisters, is the classic case. Where you had Rav Pomeranz, who was a rabbi, I believe, in Brooklyn. He was a Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim. He only had daughters. And each daughter was absolutely brilliant. One is married to Professor Slonim, one is married to a big, to an Av Beit Din here, who I think is retired today, Tzimbelis. Each one married first rate. But each girl was a first rate Talmud Chachama, Talmidah Chachama. And the Rav knew this. And there's a famous comment one time, the Rav was giving a shiur and said something, you know, and these were balabatim. He was not as deep in Moriah as he was in the yeshiva. Moriah, he was more blot-oriented and Rambam-oriented, but it was on a slightly lower level than the yeshiva. And one time he said something which he considered the deep, and someone asked him a question, and he responded, he said, "Was Menkman, what do you think, that you can understand me as well as the Pomeranz sisters?" And the Rav actually mentioned their name, and he knew that these girls were first rate. So Maria certainly accomplished, and it gave the Rav a chance to talk Hashgafa. You know, when he spoke at the end, he never did that in the yeshiva, the Chumash that you're talking about. The Hashgafa, listen, there's a limit what one person can do. You know how many invitations I get to speak all over? What, are you going to accuse me of being lazy? You know, it's a limit what one human being can do. Okay. Then, I also want to say that what I said in class, I hold 100%, I hit the nail on the head, the cheapening of titles. Everyone is a rabbi, every synagogue is a synagogue, it's not a synagogue, it's a Beit HaRav, the Aron HaKodesh becomes an armor, a closet, and the minute you take the concept of rabbis, and everyone, Chavei Knesset, automatically gets smicha, we're cheapening the title. And here I want to show you something amazing. Sometimes I come up with something, you know, all right, I don't know if I'm being serious or being funny, don't know if I'm right or wrong. So if you recall when we dealt with the history of Agudat Yisrael months ago already, so I mentioned to you that as far as I know, Agudat Yisrael is the only organization in history that gave an honorary smicha. Do you remember that? Moreinu Harav Rabbi Yaakov Rosenheim. And whenever he was referred to in Agudat Yisrael circles, Moreinu Harav, and I don't know, as a Litvak, as a YU graduate, to give an honorary smicha, I can understand an honorary doctorate, but an honorary smicha, so am I right or wrong? And lo and behold, in this volume I told you about last week by Rabbi Eliezer Reich, who may be listening to the shiur, it's a very nice volume. I was very, because I saw some of the letters originally, and I'm very impressed the way it was put out by the publisher, a very nice volume. And he talks about, in 1954, he was at the Knesiyah Gedolah. It was the first Knesiyah, if you remember my lectures, the first Knesiyah Gedolah after the Holocaust. And he describes it to his parents in this letter. I'm quoting from page 135. The actual opening ceremony and session was indeed a magnificent occasion which will always remain in the memories of all those present. excluding the Hesper on our 6 million brothers. I don't know, in American English we would say for our 6 million brothers, am I right? We wouldn't say on, but maybe in Manchester their English is slightly different. The most moving scene was perhaps when Moreno Yaakov Rosenheim, aged and frail and almost overcome with emotion, addressed his few words to the Knesia, footnoted. If I am not mistaken, he was the first person in our history to receive an official honorary smicha, signed by several, including the Chafetz Chaim and Rav Chaim Olzer Grzynski. Rabbi Reich, you and Aaron Rakefet, Shnei Neviim, Mitnabim, Besignon Echad. Right or wrong, word by word, what I said in class, and I even told you in class how I would have a smicha signed by the Chofetz Chaim and Rav Chaim Leizer, even if it was only an honorary one. And I can also tell you I have a schut because my great-granddaughter was named last week, and the name, her first name is after the Rebbetzin of Manchester. So Rabbi Reich, who probably knew the Unsdorfer family, Rav Unsdorfer, my great-granddaughter, bears a Hebrew version of the Yiddish name of the Rebbetzin of Manchester. Then I quoted to the Gemara in Psachim, and that's a very powerful Gemara, how Rabbi Akiva tells his son, don't live in a city where there are too many Talmidei Chachamim. And wow, that is food for thought. Not to live in a city with too many Talmidei Chachamim. It's the exact opposite of what we seek when we come in Aliyah. I always tell the story how I spent my bottom dollar back in 1969 to buy in Rehov Rav Chaim Berlin than to buy in Rehov Chernichovsky. Rehov Chernichovsky was 10,000 lira cheaper because it was one more long block away from the Kotel. But to live on a street named for that Apikiris, that poet, the way he died, it's not for the tape, not for public knowledge, the way he died. To live on a street named after him, Chas v'Chalila. But Rav Chaim Berlin, and as I say, to buy an apartment on Rehov Rav Chaim Berlin, which is all of about a block and a half long, two blocks, they give you a test in Shas and Paiskim. If you're not a bucky, you cannot buy on that street. And then when I said that, take me with a sense of humor, not too seriously, Nehemiah. And it's a free country. Then, of course, when it comes to Reb Mordechai Gifter, I halavai you would read the biography and you would see what I wrote about Reb Mordechai, what they write about Reb Mordechai Gifter, and it may very well be that I hit the nail on the head. If you need an example of Das Torah, where Das Torah goes haywire, and how it ultimately two institutions fall by the wayside, and had the opposite happened, and let him remain in Israel, who knows, America would have sought its own level, its own water, would have brought in Rashi Yeshiva, not from the family. Tells had the facilities, so it moved sideways, and Tells stone would have been lekavod ulatiferet. And of course, that's like the email I got, which I repeat again because it was based upon this class, that the greatest proof against Das Torah is that it seems last year I said that Derek Jeter should retire, Rakefet issued a Das Torah, and Derek Jeter is tearing up the world today, 37 years of age, and the leading hitter in the major leagues. So believe me, that proves that Das Torah can be wrong. Then we went to Rabbi Lichtenstein, and you see Rabbi Aaron, if you went through the shiur he gave, he is extremely sharp. The first part of the shiur parallels what we spoke about and brings all the sources and makes the distinction, like I made, a very stark distinction between Emunat Chachamim and between Das Torah. Emunat Chachamim, 1,000,000,000%. Das Torah, a concept that has no bearing and basis in the sources. If anything, Das Torah is a frightening concept because it takes the initiative out of the individual, it takes the ability to think, it takes the ability to evaluate, and also The Rabbanim themselves don't appreciate the Rav's Torah and Yosef Ekov constantly looking over our shoulders, what does God want from us? What works out, what doesn't work out, the ability to shift gears, the ability to be flexible, the ability to react to situations, and that is extremely important for the dignity that Tzelem Elokim. Now, and then Rabbanim went into a tremendous tirade. Im Ein Das, if a person doesn't have Seichel, he can be the greatest Talmud Chacham in the world, but a dead animal is smarter and better than he is. And he quoted the story with Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner, where we ended off the class, a very powerful story, how Rabbi Yitzchak is sitting shiva for his wife, and I don't know where I come from, I've said this more than once, I grew up, men had no opinion whatsoever. Women ruled the world, pshutoka mashma'o. All the men I knew went to work, came home, they had good wives who took off their slippers, made them supper, and gave them their opinions. I went to Yeshiva Salant, I don't believe there was one kid in my class who would ask his father for an opinion. But your mother, she was the one who ran the house and gave the opinions. So here is Rav Huttner from the old generation, everything he became, Shaliva Shalah Shalahu, in many ways in Rav Huttner's life. And this Rosh Yeshiva tells him, oh, your wife is better off, she's up in heaven, she's up near the Kisei HaKavod. And Rav Huttner wanted to strangle the guy. And Rav Aaron tells this, and this is Ein Dat, how can we even talk about Das Torah if elementary knowledge is lacking? And then Rav Aaron gets very, very extreme. And he hits upon a point, of course, that all of us make, and he makes it in a very sharp fashion. And of course, this comes back to the yeshiva world, and we've mentioned it so many times, what's called Matan Hebrew. Again, these are words we've made up a whole new vocabulary because of the interaction with the Haredi world. Hadrat Nashim. Moshe, wrap out that word. I never heard it before a few months ago. Hadrat Nashim, it's a new word, and the Lashon, I understand the Vadla Lashon accepted it here. So, Tachnit Haliba. What does Tachnit Haliba mean? Core curriculum. What are we talking about? Core curriculum? Every kid in the United States, whether he's Satmar, whether he's YU, whether he lives in Texas, whether he lives in New York, every kid learns arithmetic, English language, computer skills, how much I lack, because I grew up, no man typed. If I would have taken a course in typing, I would have been laughed out of the yeshiva. They would have, sissy, what are you, so we didn't type, we had no computers, obviously. Today you see kids 2 years old already playing with computers, playing with digital objects. It's a different world. So of course, in the state of Israel, we want to introduce a core curriculum. We want our children to have the ability to make a living, to live in this world, to have the skills that are needed to live in this world. And the Haredi world opposes it. And here, of course, you have the ongoing tragedy of poverty that every survey in the world shows. Israel, you see these reports, 50% of the kids are starving, absolute lies. But the Haredi world willingly chooses to live under the concept of they do not meet the basic level of income, and therefore they're considered impoverished. Now, and Rabbanim relates two terrible cases. I quote him practically word by word. He says, let me illustrate what I'm talking about. Recently I was visited by two individuals who were pleading for money. And I have to tell you, this is a terrible problem when they knock on your door, people bother you. I don't know, I'm busy, I hate these phone calls that come in. They learned it from America, in Borough Park. I went to Borough Park always last summer, so my phone is ringing. I see all the messages there, that kidnapper, Chelo Aleinu, the kid who was killed, you know what I'm talking about. And there were calls, look in your backyard, they're hunting for the kids. And all these calls are automated calls. So now in Israel, last night, I'm washed out. I came home. I'm finally sitting. I'm trying to finish a sugya. And the phone rings. Well, they want to sell you something at Stucky. And they withhold. They don't tell you the phone number. It's not that you can call back and complain. Take my name off the list. I've reached the point where I practically will not answer a call if it says withhold. And the problem is my closest friend has two phones. One with a phone number and one says withheld. So he says, last night two people came to see me from one. One of them, his parents are divorced. He is the eldest child and he has to support himself and 13 brothers and sisters. The other one, a father of 10 children and he doesn't have money for bread. And Rabbi Aaron gets hysterical here. How do you tell people to have large families? How do you influence them to live like this? When you don't teach them, when you don't give them a chance to have panasa, when you don't give them a chance to make a living. And he quotes the Gemara. You're all familiar with the Gemara in Bracha that Rabbi Yeshua was rebuked. Rabbi Gamliel was rebuked. When they made Rabbi Yeshua the Nasi, and they said to Rabbi Gamliel, Oy lador shatar panaso, she'i ata yodeya b'tzaran shel tamidei chachamim, b'mechim mitpanesim, u'b'mechim nizonim. You're supposed to know how the people live. If you don't understand that people are suffering, people are starving, how can you be the panes hadar? How can you be the Nasi? And here, how can you allow youthful people, young people, healthy people to schnurr, to plead, to put themselves into situations where they don't have money for bread? And Rabbi Aaron is very strong and very sharp here. And I don't have to tell you this, of course, when it comes to core curriculum, I don't have to go further than to say, at times I get so upset, I call people who oppose the core curriculum, Reform Jews. What is a Reform Jew? You throw away Gemara, you throw away Yiddishkeit. No, if you oppose the core curriculum, you're throwing away Gemara and Kedushin. Daf Chaf Tet, that a father is chayev lelamed et beno umanut. We have to raise our children to have the ability to make a living. Not every kid is a rocket scientist. Not every kid is a genius. Not every kid can go to medical school in the Technion. I understand that. But every kid has to have that ability. And God forbid we should oppose core curriculum. It's against Kol HaTorah Kula. Yafta L'kim L'yefet V'yishkom V'yol L'shem Yafta Tamatorim Derech Eretz Derech Eretz Chadma l'Torah, the Gemara Chayav l'Lamed l'Beno Umanot, and Rabbi Aaron here is very, very sharp, and of course, in my humble opinion, absolutely, totally, completely correct. And as the Gemara says, if you don't raise your child with a profession, he winds up being a liston, winds up being a thief, winds up being a crook. I don't have to tell you how many white collar crimes we have today in the Torah world. Who could believe that so many from Jews wind up in jail? Swindles, money, a graduate of Lakewood now faces, I don't know if he'll ever see the light of day. And I happen to know one of the people that I never knew he was, I knew he was wealthy, but you know, to me, wealth means you have $1 million. Wow. $86 million lost with this swindler. And the money, he knew him from shul. And you know, you have we Jews, Minzeta Aveli Yid, Ashena Yid, a Jew with a kippah. You trust him. Isn't that the way you would react? You see a Jew who thinks like you, Enash, Anshei Shlomeinu, Minzeta Yid, Ashteta Langishman Esrei. He davens properly. You trust him. Go and dream. This guy is the biggest swindler alive. It's a miracle yet that Madoff doesn't put on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. We are fortunate there that at least no one accused Madoff of putting on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. So this is Rabbi Aaron's next point, but it's not the high point yet. Yes, Nehemiah.
It seems like I don't mean to be too conservative, but it seems like the core curriculum goes against the Gemara, because the core curriculum is that the government mandates what's to be learned, but the Gemara, please,
whoever told you that better have his brain examined. What do I know about curriculum? Curriculum, the experts tell you what to learn. In America, what? The SACNA sets up its own textbooks for mathematics. SACNA, Beis Yaakov in America, some of the Bate Yaakov, they'll take an English book, literature, they rip out certain pages. Fine, I don't believe in that either, because if I'd be a student, I never skipped the Gemara that dealt with sex. You should know. I taught teenage kids. I said, gentlemen, I know very well, if I will skip the Gemara, you'll all run away, you'll all run to the Sansino and look at the Gemara I skipped. I said, let me teach the Gemara and give you some derech eretz and understanding of Torah Hashem to me and Kedoshim to you. So whoever told you that is off the wall. Mathematics, computer, core curriculum, English, there's nothing here that will lead you astray. We're not talking philosophy, we're not talking going to university. We're talking to the basic ability to function as a human being in the world that exists in the year 2013. That is core curriculum. I know what they say. No one's going to tell you. Here, this Gaffney one. Morons. Sub-level morons. Last Wednesday, Gaffney. Every yeshiva boy will run to jail rather than serve in the army. Did you follow what's going on? It's better than a Shakespearean play. Evidently, the Rosh Yeshiva told, why are you an idiot? You moron, I'll tell a Sutton. So Friday already, I woke up, tried 5 o'clock news, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. Gaffney, the hero of the Chiloni world. You heard Gaffney on Thursday night? Any yeshiva boy who's not learning 24-7, let me get it right, and avoids the army, should be in jail. You can only not serve in the army if you learn day and night. If not, put him into jail. God, the guy is an idiot. And he's a Rav? Anyone calls him a Rav in my presence will get his face washed in mud. And I'm not a violent guy, but there's a limit to my patience. Gentlemen, but then Rabaran, and here we come to a very fascinating conflict where perhaps I am at fault and my heart is too good. Rabaran is much stronger than me, and I'll leave it to you to decide who is right. And I have to tell you what my weak spot is. My weakness is, Baruch Hashem, I learned in Lakewood. The Lakewood I learned in was not America yet. It was Kletsk. It was 100 students, 102 students. The basic core curriculum, the basic core were the survivors. It was pure litter. To see their relationship with Rabaran, it's beautiful. And this love of Lithuania, and I'll explain in a second what it means, is very deep in my heart. Whatever else I have adds to it. Complements it, supplements it, but the basic core remains. It never left. Now you see, I saw litter. If you went to Lakewood 5 years after I went, it was no longer Lithuania. By 1957, 58, it's Americanizing. After Rabaran's death, it's an American institution. Rabaran Lichtenstein never was in Lithuania. He learned in Chaim Berlin. Chaim Berlin was an American institution. It's the classic story of Rav Hutner, as I told you last week, the clean-shaven guy at RJJ, becoming the Hasidic Rebbe with hatred for Zionism, what he wrote in Jewish Observer, Lo Yuchupah. I saw his first cousin in my presence, took the article, Rabbi Yoshua Hutner threw it on the floor, spat in it, and stomped in it. And I saw it with these two eyes. I'm not telling you, Agni P8 now. Right in my one flight under me. We lived together till the day he died. My relationship with Rav Hutner, what are you talking about? Rabaran didn't see Kletsk, didn't see litter. So he's not bound by that basic love and surrender that is a machsom, it's a guards my mouth. I can't be too sharp. And this is Rav Shach. Yitz Rubin, Rabbi Rubin, has always taunted me. Why? I don't criticize Rav Shach. All right, of course I differ. Of course I'm in a different world. Of course I was a bosom buddy of his son, Ephraim. We went to Bernard Level graduate school together. You can check it out. I got my doctorate at 67. He got his doctorate at 68. We were in the same classes together. But you see, you have to understand Rav Shach. Study Making of a Gadol by Rav Nissim Kamenetsky. Rav Shach didn't have money to take public transportation to Kletsk to study. He walked miles. He didn't have money for shoes. I don't know whether it's true or not. They say that the shoes he wore for years that were worn down to nothing. Remember, shoes are the most important part of your clothes. Your body stands on shoes. You can be a cheapskate, I know, but don't be a cheapskate when it comes to shoes. Buy good shoes. Your body stands on it. Pants, you can be cheap. A shirt, you can be cheap. I have friends that buy a shirt, it's tailor-made, hundreds of dollars. I look at them like they're crazy. Okay. But a kippah, you can be cheap. I bought this in the shuk, I think, for 5 shekel. But shoes are shoes. They say they're in a safe, that someplace in Bnei Brak they have these shoes that the Rav Shach wore to walk the Kletsk. It's not just that. You don't know how cold East Europe can be. I told you, I was there, I functioned there. I'm lucky to be alive. And that's not an exaggeration. I didn't write about it in the book. No one will believe me anyway, but if I go back to Riga, I have to make a bracha shasali neis b'makom hazeh. I functioned in 35, 40 degrees below zero. I had no choice. An old lady died. This is written up in all the Israeli papers. An old lady died in Bnei Brak. Lady, a survivor, no children, no grandchildren, no great-grandchildren. And Rav Shach went to the funeral. Oh, Rav Shach went, the crowd went. Everyone asked him. Rav Shach, who's Mavatl Torah? Who leaves Torah? That's Panovich or Rosh Yeshiva? Rav Lozman Shach? And he told the story that when he learned in Kletz, it was freezing. He had no money to buy a coat. It was a luxury infinitely beyond him. And this lady who saw him all the time in the Beis Medrash, in the women's section where they were learning, came in one day and gave him a coat. But that's Rav Shach. It's hard for me to be critical. That love for Torah, that ibbige Gebenkeit, that love for learning, this was Litha. And that's what I believe in. That's what I believe. That's what I come from. That's what I preach. That's what I teach. That's the heart of it. Now, here you come to a very fascinating moment in Israel history. Aaron Raketa is giving a shia. Who cares? Rabban Lichtenstein is giving a shia. All right, a few more people care. But what, Haaretz is coming? The TVs are coming. Who cares? Rav Shach is giving a shiur. Panovich or Rosh Yeshiva. And Rav Shach has a lot of skliyot. You know, you don't start to comprehend. He started teaching in Hebrew. Do you know why he started? The first Rosh Yeshiva to teach in Hebrew. So kids from the Eidot HaMizrach could come. For whatever the reasons are, the Eidot HaMizrach have not succeeded in creating yeshiva here that are first rate. I don't know why, but Parat Yosef, you know which has the greatest number of Sephardic students in the world today? Which yeshiva? No, tell me. Mir Yeshiva has the greatest number of Eidot HaMizrach students. Probably a few thousand. If not a few thousand, well more than 1,000. Mir yeshiva. Chevron, Panovich, Rapshat, and in Mir, they have shirim in every language. It's an institution with like 50 subdivisions. Hebrew, English, Yiddish, French, Russian. I wouldn't be surprised if they have Spanish. And halavai, one day they should have Amharic. So Rav Shach started teaching in Hebrew, and it was hard for him. I came here 31 years of age. I went into the army. I taught mechala. Me'latzti l'umor divrei. I can lecture in Hebrew like I can lecture in English, even better in Hebrew. It's a better language. But Rav Shach came here much older. And it's very hard, to learn a new language when you're in. Some people have a gift. The Rav had a gift with languages, but not everyone has that gift. Lubavitcher Rebbe had a gift with languages. I think the Rav's gift was greater than the Lubavitcher Rebbe, because I never yet heard the Rebbe give a lecture in English on the level that the Rav could speak English. So he has a lot of zchuyot. But still, Rav Shach is giving a shir, so what? But there was one moment in the history of the state of Israel where Rav Shach was giving a shir and the entire state was focused on that shir. At the time, I don't know, we had 4.5 million Jews here, whatever the number was, it's, I believe, 1992. It was the evening where Derry and Shas were trying to pull off with Agudat Yisrael, throw the Likud out of power, and put the Marach and Shimon Peres in power. And everything hinged upon what Rav Shach would say, Das Torah. And there was that evening a big rally called, what's the name of the stadium in South Tel Aviv, Eliyahu, what do they call it? Yad Eliyahu. What's it? Forget about Nokia today. Yeah, today, for money you get honey. City Field. Well, when is that rally coming off? I said, it hasn't come off yet. I haven't heard about it. I mean, City Field, not yet. Anyone know when? 2 weeks. Oh, for Matan Torah, Shavuos. Ah, I understand already. Good. I want to hear some of the talks, see on what level they come in. There was a rapid. Yad Eliyahu. Agudat Yisrael. Place was mobbed. Standing room only. What does it hold? 20,000. Standing room only. The dais, Rav Ovadia, the Belzer Rebbe, and Rav Shach comes in. And all of Israel is focused. The TV, Channel 1, direct broadcast from Yad Eliyahu. And there's Rav Shach sitting with a Gemara, learning. Oblivious to the world. And then comes his talk. And boy, if Rav Shach was ever criticized, this is Reb Aaron here. Very sharp. Very critical. And he says, Reb Aaron, read it. I was waiting to hear there's a mitzvah, Avat Hashem, Kiddush Hashem, bring people to love God, Kiddush HaChayim. And here Rav Shach gets up and Rav Aaron accuses him of creating laughter, Sina, Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mikshol, a moment in time when 4 million eyes are upon you. Every newspaper, every chiloniyi, every person who knows nothing about Torah, every person who hates Torah, the future of the government is in your hands. And Rav Shach's talk that night, the Baron finds it. Grade D. And it's right here. This is Das Torah. And of course, what was the talk? We who were used to Rav Soloveitchik, we were disappointed on the level that there was no depth to the talk. But in declaring that we can never go with Mapai, the Avodah, the famous sentence, who are we talking about? People who eat rabbits and seafood. And that was the heart of the talk. And Rabbaran was extremely, totally, completely disappointed. Yes, it's true. Weeks before, there had been news in Israel that on certain kibbutzim, they're raising rabbits so they can eat them. You all know how much seafood is consumed. Just go to Herzliya, the wealthy area by the beach. You'll be shocked how many non-kosher restaurants there are boasting seafood. Rav Shach, very powerful. Rabbaran, very upset with that talk. Peres lost out, Mapai lost out. All the commentators would talk about the seafood, the smack in the face of the kibbutzim. If I were giving the talk that night, I would have taken an entire different approach. The outcome, totally agreeing with Rav Shach. But I would have spoken about our past, our future, the challenge. Am Yisrael, coming home, the collective identity, that which unites us, that which unites the generations. In a word, Danny, I would have spoken about the romance of being a Jew. Rav Shach lost the opportunity. Rabbaran was angry. Aaron Rakefet, I was very moved, not by that part of the talk, but he started to talk about the past, and it was fascinating to see that the moment he got emotional, he could no longer remain in Hebrew. He broke into Yiddish. And at Keret, was es given a shtup in Europa, what the Jewish house was like, what a Shabbos was like, a mother, a father. It's a sad conflict at that moment, because you could see that Rav Shach was still in the past. Couldn't comprehend the future, couldn't meet it, couldn't challenge it. You could see the difference between him and the Rav, how Moriah Rebbe would have handled that moment. Can't be critical. It's sad. More than that, you could see, if you're out of touch with the people, how you can't be Makadosh Shem Shemayim and Avat HaTorah. What did Rakefet say? Laugh at him. Laugh all you want. You'll see 50 years from now who was right. The greatest mistake our politicians are going to make is to introduce the concept that 100, 400, 1,000 Iluyim a year don't have to serve in the army. First of all, it's halakhically incorrect. Nowhere, but nowhere, does the Gemara imply that a Talmud Chacham does not serve in a Muhammad Mitzvah army. Nowhere. And this talk about the end of Hilchot Shmita B'Yovel, at the end of every set of halachas, the Rambam gives a philosophic discourse. It has nothing to do with halacha. Halavai, we should achieve that moment when we can all be Shevet Levi and we won't need an army. But Hilchot Melacha, Mada Halachat. And boy, there are no exemptions there. The only ones we have to kick out of the army are the Mechalalei Shabbos. If you're sincere and believe in Torah, you have to have a demonstration Saturday night in Kika Rabin in Tel Aviv. Anyone who's Mechalal Shabbos, anyone who talks between Tfilin Shalyat and Tfilin Shalosh, anyone who talks between Yishtabach to Hameir, Rabin, is out of the army. Yarei v'rach elevav. And there was Rav Shach in front of this audience, and he starts criticizing the secular newspapers. And I told you this many times, and he mentions Panim El Panim. And my heart broke. Panim El Panim, 1992, had stopped publishing 20 years earlier. He was totally out of touch. If we exempt Talmidei Chachamim from the army, Lech Reid, remember the drasha I told you? Ki shichet amcha. All the Darshanim say Moshe Rabbeinu was up in the mountain, away from the people. The people sin. A rabbi, betoch ha'mi'ani yoshev. You have to be part of the people. You have to know what's going on. You have to master the core curriculum. My grandsons are mad at me that I look at Mariv, that I look at Yediyah. How can you look at this Saba? You're right, there's a lot of trash in it. They're absolutely right. But I live the Tochamim. I have to know what's going on in the country. I don't just want to know what I think and what my friends think. We all think the same way. And then what's the big deal? I got to know what's going on. I'm part of this country. I have to react. I have to write a letter occasionally. Yesterday I wrote a letter. First time, I think, in 42 years. I think the last letter I wrote was defending Rav Jolti when he came out against praying in a temple that does not have a mechitza, when the conservative movement began here. It's the last letter I wrote, as far as I can recall. You know what's fascinating? Rav Amin is very critical, very critical. And you missed the whole analysis, David, beyond what we spoke about in my office. Rav Baran is very critical of Rav Shach. Yes, Rav Baran is right, we were disappointed, and the talk I just gave in class already was on a higher level of what was said that night at Yad Eliyahu. And I have a tape of it. This is nothing that you have to believe me. I can show it to you on a video. Movies. This was a tape, a recording, a video. I have a video of it. Gentlemen, you know what was interesting about that talk? There is one result that Rav Baran may not be aware of. It did have an impact on a certain element. You know which element? The old-time Europeish Jews. The people like Ben Artsy. Remember what we've spoken about with Ben Artsy? Sarah Netanyahu's father threw it all away. The Vadik, Rabbi Yisrael Horowitz, Yiddishkeit, Shabbos, threw it all away. Zionism, holy rebellion, a new world, a new people. And he came back when he saw what was becoming of his grandchildren. Lo aleinu. People of that ilk. And there was one famous story that made all the newspapers. Rabitzel Panovich, the great Panovich Rav. Rabitzel Gon Shebega Einen. Rabitzel Rabinovich. His grandson was on a Shoma HaTzeir kibbutz, a leftist kibbutz, raised his family there, chaver, came back to Yiddishkeit, b'lev v'nefesh, because of Rav Shach's talk. He was moved. He came back. He came to get a bracha from Rav Shach. They let him in immediately. They didn't look at him as a member of a leftist kibbutz. They looked at him as an einikel from Itzel Panovich. You have to understand who Rabbi Itzel Panovich was. Rabbi Itzel Rabinovich, Gon Shebegoinim, big Rosh Yeshiva at the start. Then he becomes Rav of Panovich, a giant. They looked at him with awe, an einikel, a grandson. He was moved. He came back. That element was affected. But the Israeli element, it was lost. Lost under Chiloniyim, and The most moving part, when he broke into Yiddish, unfortunately, was lost on the Israeli youth, even those with the kippot and the kippot strugot, because when it comes to Yiddish, they only know, understand, they know one word, abyssina, a drop. That's all they know. The heart of it is lost. So I differ with the Baron Lichtenstein humbly, but I understand his point of view very strongly, and I don't know who's more distant from Das Teira, the Baron Lichtenstein, or someone who's fortunate to also bear the humble name Aaron, yours truly. I leave it for you to decide in the coming years. Ad kan, Das Torah. Yitzchak, if you ever say to me, when am I going to reach Das Torah, you're not fair. I kept my word, lekavod u'letiferet. But what Rabbi Yitzchak was referring to was that many years ago I gave a very primitive lecture compared to what I did now in the last months. I gave a very primitive public lecture on Das Torah. And after that lecture, I got so many requests to repeat it all over Israel. And I got frightened because I saw there are organizations that really have, our organizations of Shomer Shabbos Jews, of Frum Jews, of Kippot Sukkot Jews, but they have an animosity towards the Haredi world. And I didn't want to become a whip in their hands beating the Haredi world. And I kept quiet. It's perhaps 20 years ago that I gave that preliminary talk on Das Torah, and now I gave it belayed the nefesh with many sources. But I want to explain my attitude towards the Haredi world. I hope I can be influential, because it's very sad. I see my own grandchildren have an absolute enmity towards the Haredi world. They don't serve in the army. They don't have core curriculum. Their attitude towards Israel and you know, the problems that are on the front burner in this next election. There's never been an election in the history of the state of Israel where the heart of the election centers around one topic, Haredim. It's an unbelievable election. And I want to tell you how this all began and tell you a true story that we lived in the Kollel about 31 years ago it happened. And I gave a lecture about this, you know, these thoughts, not like I'm giving now, but touching upon them. And in Chol HaMoed Pesach, touring botanical gardens with my wife, we had other people with us. I don't remember if we had grandchildren, great-grandchildren, but touring botanical gardens in Chol HaMoed Pesach. Oh, I think I had some grandchildren with me, and I think a daughter was with me. I met a student of mine from Michlala, postgraduate, an American origin girl, married to a YU musmach. And I couldn't believe it. She quoted, she said, Rebbe, of all the lectures I heard from you back in the early 80s, there was one talk you gave that influenced my whole life. And she quoted to me what I'm about to quote to you now. I couldn't get over it. I said, you should know, Yifka, Becky, I intend to retell the story in the Kollel in a few weeks' time. And here's what happened. It had to be around 1981. I'll mention the name. I had a wonderful Talmud in the Kollel, Rabbi A.B. What was the last name? I'm blocking out. Kelman. Rabbi Abby Kelman. So first time I asked him, well, you know, how do you name Abby? It's a girl's name. It's a short Avraham. So he told me, he quoted a song to me that my father gave me a girl's name, so if they beat me up, I'll know how to fight back. Do you reckon?
Oh, it's Johnny
Cash song. Oh, Baruch Hashem. Rabbi Reuben is a bucky, not only in Shas and Toskin, but way beyond. Who the heck is Johnny Cash? Cash, it sounds good, but the cash, no?
Cash has that song.
Yeah, but who is he?
He was an American folk singer who, one of the things that he did, which Chesed was,
right,
he identified the people who were in prison.
Uh-huh.
He went to there to give them chizuk by singing. He did concerts there now.
In prisons. Okay, is he alive, Johnny Cash? All right, so Zichrono Livracha, we have to say. I have to Google him. I never heard of him. But I'm living here 43 years, see, so he evidently came on the scene. I remember the Garfinkel over two Jewish boys. What were they? Simon and Garfinkel. And I remember one time it's written up in Holloman's book that the kid in the dorm in Torah Vadas had their record on or their tape on, and the Rebbe walked in. Vashva, Goyishkeit is this. Rebbe, these are two Yiddish kinder. They went to Flatbush Yeshiva. It turns out that one of them may have gone to Flatbush in elementary school. And this is Yiddish Nigunim. Oh, Ebezei, Kemen Das Heren. If so, you can listen to them. So that I remember. And I was very moved. There was a guy from England about students, Bricks in the Wall, that there's a song like that. That how do you relate to students? Who was the guy from England? One of these singers. Very. What was the name?
Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd, exactly. What was the song I'm talking about? Bricks in the Wall. Yeah, Bricks in the Wall. And so I remember Baruch Hashem. I should remember Shasim Poskim. I can remember Narishkeit. Bricks in the Wall. Okay. Anyway, so Abby Kelman was a very fine student, and he's engaged to marry. And he marries, and they have children, maybe grandchildren by now. He's a rav someplace in Massachusetts today. I saw him recently. I saw his wife. She was here. He marries an Israeli girl from a very fine family, the Cohn family, a Yemenite family, but Geula Cohn's niece. Her father is a brother. I don't know if the father's not alive. He's a colonel of Rach. He was in Chinuch. Father was a brother to the famous follower of Menachem Begin, Geula Cohn, who was Chaverat Knesset for many years. And her brother learned in a lunchfoot in the Gush, as the graduate. One time, Abby comes into class, he says, Rebbe, I have a problem, I have to discuss with you. And he tells me the following story. Rabbaran held a press conference. You know what that term is. By Rabbaran, it means a question and answer period, but they called it a press conference. I don't know if he gave it the term, one of the students. So this is the Gush, approximately 1981, after the Yom Kippur War, and all that we've gone through. We're right before the next war, the Lebanese War, and a kid shoots up a question, an Israeli kid, says to Rav Aaron, Rebbe, who do we have more in common with, a Chiloni in North Tel Aviv, or a Haredi Jew? I don't know if they use the word Haredi yet. Haredi is a word that develops perhaps a little bit later as a descriptive term, not a pejorative term, but to differentiate between a kippah sruga and a shtreimel. I don't have to use the word Haredi, but I'll use the word that we best understand today, or a Haredi Jew in Meir Shearim. And that's the question he threw at Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. And Rav Aaron answers, much more in common with the Haredi Jew in Meir Shearim. And this kid was shattered. He was very upset. And a whole core in the Gush was very upset. And this kid came home, and he's speaking with Abby Kelman. And he has Abby all upset. And how could Rav Aaron say this? How could Rav Aaron think this way? And I don't have to tell you, Chiloni in Tel Aviv, we serve in the army with him. We go to university with him. We pay taxes with him. We work with him. We joke with him. We read the same newspapers. All right, he doesn't know anything about Yiddishkeit. But it's not his fault. It's the way he was raised. Haredi and Meir Shearim doesn't do any of these things. All right, he's from, he doesn't observe Yom HaTzmut, doesn't observe Yom HaZikaron. He doesn't stand when the siren blows. He claims it's Min HaGoyim. You've all heard that. Who do you have more in common with? How can it be? So I gave a whole shiur explaining Reb Baron's point of view and how ultimately Reb Baron is totally right. I said it's absolutely true that there are many aspects of the general Israeli life that we share with the Jew in North Tel Aviv. But can you be his intimate friend? Can you eat in his kitchen? Comes to Shabbos? I mean, how do you feel? I ask you, I've often said this, when you see cars driving on Shabbat, does it bother you? I don't know, it hurts me to see Jewish people turning on the motor, driving a car. Oh, Shabbos is terrible. It's the touchstone of being a human being, of being a Jew. If you're not Shomer Shabbos, you don't believe in God. You make Kiddush, whatever, you both get, there's a God. Once there's a God over you, your whole gestalt changes. You have to answer to someone. You can't be an animal. Look what went on Friday night. Look what went on in Israel. It's beyond words. You turn on the radio after Shabbos. Where do you hear this murder, that murder, and the murder in Be'er Shevet? So Eklah Shamayim. A guy comes down and tells a bunch of drunk teenagers, some of them not even 18, not even 17, please keep the noise down. I'm trying to put my infant to sleep. And they kill him. And you should hear the radio, everyone giving a theory what to do, and the police and the shmeis and this one, idiots, what to do? Chinuch Torani, the romance of being a Jew, that's what to do. Shabbos, who do they have more in common with? True, on Yom HaTzmud I'll get upset, they rip a flag off my car. Rabbi Gold screamed and yelled at me, how I can be so open-minded towards Satma if they rip flags off your car in Hanav. All right, I put on flags with little pins in them, so when they try to rip it off, all right, they'll get a red, blue, white flag. That's what you have to do. My Eretz Yisrael disappears at the moment they rip a flag off. That moment, they're up because of Gemara. I'm also a Kanoi. Gentlemen, Reb Baron is right. Who do you have more? What can I say? What can I do? Who can I open? I can open a Daf Gemara. No matter, we can go to a Shir. We can zog in a Chassidish Shabbat. I can go to a Fabrengen. Who do you have more in common with? So of course, I have to have, as much as I love and I honor the Chiloni Jew, and I have to respect him, and I can't come down hard on him, and I have to understand he's a Tinok Shenishpan, all that that implies, and I have to treat him with respect, and I have to go out of my way to be decent. I heard a story from my grandson just the other day. He was Shabbat in Zichron Yaakov. His whole class from HaKotel, the fourth year HaKotel, went to Zichron Yaakov for Shabbat. So among the speakers was someone who had been a high-ranking army officer and lives in Zichron, also a product of yeshivat, etc. And he told a fascinating story, how he was in London when the Yom Kippur War broke out. And I know the story was repeated 1,000 times over. It explains George Shultz, why George Shultz, the Secretary of State, was the greatest Oved Yisrael we ever had. And on Shabbos, he's davening in a shul, and some time in the middle of davening on Shabbos Yom Kippur, he's davening in shul, in the middle of davening, a guy walks in screaming and shouting, there's war in Israel. He runs home and he turns on the radio and he can't believe what he hears. He calls the Israeli consul. They tell him, he says he's an officer, he wants to go back, he's in reserves, how can he continue? And on Yom Kippur already, he was at the airport and thousands of Israelis were there trying to get on. There was one plane going out that Al Al got started up on Yom Kippur, and they selected. There's only seating for like 400 on the plane. They selected who could go, you know, they took the army people. And here's a guy that could have stayed in London, minded his business, he went back. George Shultz was then a professor, I believe, at Georgetown University, a postgraduate school, and his best student was an Israeli who went back to fight. Same story like London, except the person from George Washington never returned. He fell in battle. And Shultz said that turned him into a Zionist and gave him understanding of the Jewish people and the state of Israel. The fellow from London comes back and fights and does, and if you recall the Yom Kippur War, it was not like the Six-Day War. The Six-Day War, everyone was demobilized within 2 weeks. The Yom Kippur War, we remained at full mobilization. I lived it. I wasn't in the army yet, but I lived it. I delivered mail in Jerusalem. There was no one to walk the streets. For about 6-7 months, there was full mobilization yet. When the guy came back, a Chiloni guy said to him, "You don't know what an impression you made upon me that you came back and you didn't have to." He said, "I have to reevaluate my whole understanding of religious Jews." So you see, there's no question, and of course he returned to his roots, to his forebears, to the romance of being a Jew. And there's no question we have to have a nice and a good, and this is what Rabbi Lichtenstein felt so bad about Rav Shach's talk, that instead of ennobling the Israeli scene and the achievements, he simply was critical. And you know, the average Chiloni is, "So what's wrong if I eat a rabbit? What's wrong about it? The guy doesn't have Shabbat, doesn't have Kashrut, doesn't have Tarat Mishpacha. So you're suddenly going to criticize him?" It's much more basic than that. But nevertheless, when push comes to shove, it's with a Haredi that at least we speak the same language. And I want to show you an attitude towards Haredim and an understanding of Haredim. And let me go one step further. And let me quote to you what I quoted in my shirm on Sunday many months ago in a totally different context. The fact that we have differences among us, even though we're all committed Jews, is natural. It may be desirable. It's part of the reality. May I remind you, Reb Moshe Feinstein, Ikrot Moshe, I see here it says, the Chelek on Choshen Mishpat, where he has an addendum on Evin HaEzra. And I quote to you, Siman Bet, in that addendum, and Reb Moshe there, remember, he deals America, in gathering of the exiles, 1,001 different minhagim. All these Jews who never saw each other before. When did a Litvak see a chassid? When did a chassid see a yekker? When did a yekker see an ungarisha? When did all of them see a Sephardic Jew? And suddenly in America, everyone is thrown together in New York City, everyone's living on top of each other, and we have the same thing in Israel, Al-Achat Kama V'Kamer, 100 times more. And they're different in Hagim. And you all know the story there, where this individual complains to Reb Moshe that his wife wants to wear a shekel, not a tichel. And Reb Moshe tells him off, and he says, "Everyone is different in Hagim, don't interfere with your wife." And he says, I understand that you shave. No? What are you carrying on? That if your wife wears a shekel, people think it's a real hair? And if you shave, won't you worry that people will think you're shaving with the shaving cream, with a razor, not with a shaver? What are you making chumrat for? And Reb Moshe takes a very benevolent but honest attitude. We have different minhagim, and these already is halacha, and nevertheless we have different ways of lifestyle, and each one is as legitimate as the other one. And then there's the famous tshuva in the original volume on Evin Ezra, Siman Nuntet, the tshuva to St. Louis. And if you recall, there of course Reb Moshe deals with this man whose wife comes from a community where every married woman cuts off all her hair, and on top of it puts a shaitel. And this man is makpid that she shouldn't cut off her hair, and the poor woman doesn't know what to do. She's caught between the way she was raised, her upbringing. She comes from Hungary, she survived the war, and now she's caught up in St. Louis with this individual. And Reb Moshe paskins that she has nothing to worry about. She can change her minhag. She has to follow the husband. And if he is makpid, she does not shave her hair to put a shaitel on top of it. So we see already that even before we start to discuss hashgafa, we have many different approaches halachically, and we can go on and on with examples, and communities live side by side, and we don't kill each other, we don't fight with each other, we learn that there are differences. And that's halachically, and I don't have to tell you, you saw on Pesach what goes on here with legumes and what goes on here with rice, and you saw, Yitzchak, I'll get to you in a second, relax, and you saw on Pesach, psychologically, all the Ashkenazim were eating rice and legumes the last day of Pesach. No, we live on top of each other. This is part of being a Jew. We have machloket, we have differences halachically, but we live v'shalom v'shalva, and I don't think anyone in the world was called any less religious because he ate rice on Pesach and legumes on Pesach. That's his custom. And I don't think anyone in the world is any more religious if all he eats is shmur matzah and he follows the gon sheep there, and each time it's a mitzvah that you eat matzah, and that's why you have to have shmur matzah all of Pesach. All right, we have halachically various ways to live. We can be more machmur, more mekil. It's very important that a person should be balanced. I'm quoting the good, citing, I'm paraphrasing the Mishnah in Ediyot. We shouldn't be machmer all the time, we shouldn't be mekel all the time, but there's certain things, we're machmer, we're mekel, each one has his own idiosyncrasies. I can tell you, I don't eat people, that, why don't you eat normal gelatin? I'm machmer. I know very well my Rebbe was mate gelatin, Reb Chaim Moshe was mate gelatin, but what can I do? On this point, I am machmer. I feel whatever, I feel the need to be machmer. There are other issues where chveisam may kill. It's everyone is an individual. Okay, that's in halacha. Yes, Yitzchak?
There is a basic principle of al tifrosh metzibor. And Russia, why is he a Russia on Pesach? Because he separated himself.
Yeah, but...
I know he separated himself from the point of view of halachic science. Right. But the truth is, the Haredi world... Well, has separated themselves from what the Salvation called the Goral, the Brit Goral.
Brit Goral, yeah.
Before we have a Brit Yehud, which means a covenant of destiny to bring Torah to the world and to be a Mamlechet Kohen Goy Kadosh, we have also what a Brit Goral, common faith. These characters, and they have shown the Nebra, have separated themselves. They don't feel a feeling. Now, he wanted to defend his uncle and said he's a bigger Zionist because he lives in Yerushalayim, never left, and Rabbeinu Soloveitchik was a Zionist. Okay, fine, very nice. He ever says that one of his sons fought in the army and did not die in
Yitzchak.
So that's what we have in common with the North Talmud guy.
That right.
I would have given a different answer, and I'm far below the level of you and of our listeners. But I would say, I'm sorry.
You have more in common with the guy in
North Talmud. I have more in common with a secular kibbutzman whose son died in the North Talmud and who does be worried.
I was asked that very question on the battlefield of Sultan Yaakov when I gave the Sheyur right after the battle ended. Hundreds of there, and the commanding officer was on a Luft Mishneh, said to me, Kvot Harav, exactly your question. V'mi yeshli yoter mishutaf im ha-Yehudim kan lamrod she-chelkenu mechalalei Shabbat v'ani betolcham, or yeshli mashu mishutaf im ha-Bnei Dodim sheli v'Borough Park Sholei Shabbat Avalein Lechem Yachas Vein Lechem Zikul LeMedina. That was the very question I got. And I double-talked my way out of it. I was actually applauding. Okay. But Yitzchak, you're making one mistake. I already gave months of lectures on why I don't believe in Das Torah and why I don't live in the world you just described. What do you want out of me? I agree with you. I'm not here to lecture on that. I'm here to explain an attitude that we should have and give you an idea of what I think is happening.
An attitude
towards sinners. An attitude, Satan. You can call it as you wish. I want to call it...
I come from a Hungarian background. I grew up with people who used to say, in other words, the fact that the man was a genius in halacha does not in any way justify that his people go into Iran, stand in front of the Russian embassy when they were justifying those things. Can you see these people who identify with our enemies? We have a prayer for them.
Yeah, but I.
She didn't want them to think from.
Yeah, but I don't believe that the Jews in Mei Sharim, 99% of them don't identify with our enemies. You are referring to an extreme element that came out of Lakewood Dafka.
How come they're not, maligned by the rest?
Moshe Hirsch, I learned with him Lakewood, and his son today, Mordechai Hirsch, I think the name is, appeared that God have mercy. I'm talking about the Haredi world, which consists in Israel of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Jews who are Shema Torah Mitzvah through Shomer Shabbos, and their whole attitude towards the state is an evolution today. And that's what I want to talk about. But give me a chance. If we just want to say, if you agree with the Shalom Gold that we should give up on Satma Vavakasha, I don't agree. I think that we're going to be privileged yet in our lifetime to see thousands upon thousands of Satma coming and becoming part of the general Israeli society. But anyway, be it as it may, and if not my lifetime, certainly beyond my lifetime. Absolutely. Now, halacha we see... We have differences. We live with differences. Are there great differences between us? Absolutely not. When it comes to the real halachic scale, what's the oraita, what's written explicitly in the Gemara, all of us live exactly the same. Hungarians, Lithuanians, Hasidim, Edot HaMizrach, Ashkenazim. But we have many little differences, and of course legumes and rice on Pesach is a prime example. Whether we're Machmir and Glat Kosher like the Mechaber, or we're Mekil with Sichot like the Ramah, these are certainly not on the same level of the heart of Shabbat, Tashrit, and Taret Mishpacha. When it comes to Hashgafa, Alacha kama v'kama, we will have differences, we will think differently. And I want to quote to you a Gemara that the Rav quoted hundreds of times that I heard him over the decades that I was privileged to study with him. Bracha taf nun chet omer aleph, Tana Rabbanan, Haroa uchlesi Yisrael, Omer Baruch Chacham Harazim. She'en daikam doma ze leze, v'yein patzufeyim domim ze leze. And what a powerful Gemara. Look into Rashi, Chacham Harazim, Hayodea ma shebelev kol echad. So first of all, look at the physical miracle. Imagine if we all looked alike. What kind of world it would be. How would you find your wife? How would you find your husband? How would you identify your mother, your father, your children? Can you imagine if we all looked alike? And it's an amazing world, because even identical twins, as they grow older, you can identify each one. We are different. And that's physically. Our minds, our thinking, our thought process, our emotion, our interpretations. You just saw in the class, Yitzchak Anani, Yitzanani. We grew up very similarly. Yitz grew up in Maimonides, I grew up in Salanta, MTA, B'nai Akiva, Yeshiva College, REITs as you call it. Look how different we think. There's a world of difference. He wants me to call the lectures an attitude towards sinners. And I insist on calling the lectures an attitude towards Haredim. Now, I want to go one step further. I'm going to say something very deep I hope I can say it today. When it comes to halacha, and I've spent a lot of time in this, and next year I'm going to hit it in my Sunday class, black and white. Comes to halacha. We always say there's an ongoing process. I mean, always. I'm quoting the Rav, I'm quoting all that I've taught. There's an ongoing process of crystallization. This is the Rambam. Let me give you the source again. If you don't know it by heart, look it up and master it by heart, because this is axiomatic to being able to explain the halakhic process. Once you get a young man involved and he's in love and he's part of the romance of our people and he starts to learn and he questions you, well, the Rambam asks a fabulous question. Takdamata Rambam leMishneh Torah. On this level, it's the most important introduction that the Rambam wrote. He wrote many introductions to the Perish HaMishnayot, to the Seder Zrayim, but the one to Mishneh Torah is very basic, and he asked a very simple question. Why can't we pick and choose opinions in the Gemara? Simple example, why can't we have meat? Why can't we have chicken and milk together? We paskin like Rabbi Yossi Haglili. You all learned the sugya in Chulam. The famous sugya in Shabbos, Kuflamet, Kuflamet, Afra, blah, blah. Why can't we heat up water to do a brit milah? Hechshere milah ramuta, which would mean that a mall has to go to do a milah. He can drive his car on Shabbos to go and do the milah. I had that in Philadelphia. A mole drives his car. I don't want to mention the name. It's a well-known story from a prominent Yerushalayim family originally. And he drove to do milah on Shabbos. He paskins. He said to me, I paskin like Rebbe Eliezer. Just like you can heat up the water, I can't get to do the bit if I don't drive. I'm like a doctor. I drive and I drive home. And I saw it with my own eyes. I mean, I was shaking, frightened. But why not? There are opinions like that. And the Rambam asked this very question, and the Rambam gives a fabulous answer that when it comes to the maskanot of the Gemara, hiskimu aleihem kol Yisrael. This is what the Rambam answers. Now, what does it mean, hiskimu aleihem? There's a crystallization. We have machloket b'ivrit meduberet hitgapshut. Anachnu magiyim lehitgapshut. Crystallization. I don't like to transliterate words, but they do in Hebrew, but hitgapshut means the same thing, basically. And once that hitgapshut is achieved, we cannot move backwards. A kid, the wise Alec kid in Ramaz, does a paper, all the kulot in the Gemara, that's the way I live. And the Rav said, and I heard this from him when I was a student in the 50s, when the late 70s, when I spent the Shabbat in Boston with him, I spoke with him in great detail. Then I knew a little bit how to learn. And we really worked it out. And I don't know, Rabbi and I, every word I said, the Rebbe was in total agreement and added to it. And it's an ongoing process. This concept of crystallization repeats itself. It's ongoing. Because ultimately, we would like everyone to live a similar halakhic lifestyle. And you can have many examples. I gave examples in class already. For instance, electricity on Yom Tov. When I was growing up, many Hasidic Rebbeim, I saw with my own eyes in the Bronx, Hasidic Rebbeim turn on lights, taking a light from a light. The Eidot HaMizrach were Meikil, Rav Rosenberg, it's a grandfather of the Chaver Knesset, Yehuda ben Meir. He wrote a whole sefer. He was Matir electricity on Yontif. Today, there's a crystallization. We know electricity better. It involves closing a circuit, etc. It could be it's an Isha of Baina and Makabepatish. We don't turn on lights on that. But see, there's a crystallization in our lifetime. With shaving, when electric shavers came out, there was a big machloket. Today, if anyone tells you that you're not allowed to shave with an electric shaver, you could pull his tongue out and tie him up to the ceiling and put a sign on him, I'm Aritz the Oraita. All right, you don't want to shave, don't shave. You think a Jew should have a beard, fine, a Jew should have a beard. If you're going to meet the Baal Mesil Tesharim, Rav Chaim Moshe Lutzato, you might have a problem because he didn't have a beard. And I can't envision someone from Bnei Brak giving Musa to the Ramchal that he doesn't have a beard. So, all right, don't give me Musa, I don't have a beard, but I understand I have already grandchildren with beards. What can I tell you? I understand that perhaps it's better to have a beard. Most good Jews had beards. I look at pictures of my forebears. I see they had beards and bekishes, etc., etc. So there is a crystallization. At times it's lukum, at times lukula. All right, this is part of life. But we don't move back in time. Let me end off that class with a very powerful point. And Yitzhak, maybe you'll start to understand where I'm leading to. When it comes to Hashkaf, of course we have differences. Of course we think differently. But here, the crystallization is constantly changing. It is always shifting gears. If I may paraphrase Rav Soloveitchik, the Hegelian dialectics. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And it begins all over again. It's ongoing. It's not halacha. Halacha demands, commands, respect, obedience. I quote to you from Washington. It's a frame around the picture. You can't tamper with the frame. The picture you make of your life is a multifaceted individual picture depending upon you as an individual and depending upon where you live, where you find yourself. How much Torah I heard from the Rav on this topic. If we would have been created before our time, the whole Vidui and Yom Kippur, Eini Kedai, we would not have succeeded. The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us here now, we have the ability to change the world. We're here, whatever the reasons are. I dress differently than my forebears. I speak a different language than my forebears. I eat different food than my forebears. My relationship with my wife is different than it was between my great-grandparents. My relationship with my students. Different relationship here. Different times. When it comes to Hashgafa, thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And then it repeats. Unlike Halacha, where you can't move back the clock. And the examples are endless. And this is one of the basic concepts of making Aliyah. I've seen great people, I don't want to mention names, the mistakes they made. I know one story which is criminal. Many years ago, person comes to Aliyah, you expect to raise your children like you raised them in America? What he was trying to do with a daughter raised here, and who she should marry, and what her values should be. She was my student. Didn't listen to her parents. I'll never forget the wedding. We didn't know whether the parents would come till the last minute they showed up. And then she today is part of a very famous activist family in the world I believe in. Dr. Yim Lee in the Yim world. It's a big mistake. When I was 22 years of age, I not only had a bachelor's, I had a master's. A year later, I had a second master's. Slicha. I look at my grandchildren, 22 years of age, they haven't even started out in the world. They're just about finishing Hesda. Different times, different places, different values, different challenges, different lifestyle. Am I proud I have grandchildren with beards? What's there to be proud? What's there not to be proud? Different eras. Did I shave during Sfira in America? Absolutely. I traveled back and forth. Maplewood, South Orange, New York. The rough traveled. New York, Boston. Here, what can I do? My grandchildren don't shave, so my Talmidim don't shave. All right, I shave Fridays. Somach Rabban Soloveitchik, Black Rabban Lichtenstein. But you see, these are not just pure halachic issues. They are interwoven with tremendous hashkafic overtones. And hashkafa is different, in my opinion. Hegelian dialectics. If you understand the Hegelian dialectics, you can understand the hashkafic onslaught and what has happened to our people, where we succeed in coming out of the ghetto, how we relate to the challenges around us, and how slowly but surely we develop a totally new gestalt. And let me end off to prove my point. Just think back what Israel was like when it first began. You didn't see a kippah in the public thoroughfare. Either you lived in a ghetto, or you wanted to get ahead, and you hid your kippah from the people in power. I don't have to go any further than my own building, Rav Chaim Berlin 18, where we have neighbors with very famous names, neighbors who have been there since the day the building was built and opened for occupancy, 1969. Moshe Mandelbaum, previously the head of the Bank of Israel, other very important positions. Mandelbaum House, those were his parents. That's the house in which he grew up. Moshe and Simcha Mandelbaum. Moshe is my neighbor in my building. Simcha lives down the block. Moshe Mandelbaum? I never saw him go to work with a kippah when I came in Aliyah. He wore a hat, got to his office, took the hat off, sat without a kippah. I asked him why. Met many people like that. In order to get ahead, they see a kippah, you are invalidated. You are pasul. You are void. You are negated. Today, many people, if you're wearing a kippah, you have an advantage. You are everything your competitor is, plus a kippah. And that was told to me years ago by a high-ranking officer in the army. When I have two soldiers applying for the same position, and they both have the same curriculum vitae, and the same background, but one is with a kippah and one without, I always choose the one with the kippah. Today, even more so. So you see, there's a thesis and antithesis. We're working out a synthesis. Yes, Nehemiah.
So just to be crystal clear,
yeah.
The goal isn't ultimate unity between ideas and people, right?
On that level, Chas v'chalila, that should be our goal. We respect every individual, the right to think, the right to be different, the right to be individualistic. The goal is not unity on that level, it's unity as a people, unity with a united purpose, with a united Weltanschauung what we're doing here.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that Rav Kook wrote several times that Pirud is a Chilul Hashem, and Achdut is
No, I'm positive about Rav Kook. No, of course not. It's not a difference. What Rav Kook is referring to, Rav Kook was not talking in terms of everyone thinking alike, but Pirud is what Yitzchak is referring to. When Jews don't celebrate Yom HaTzmut, that is Pirud. When Jews don't appreciate the miracles that have happened here, when Jews don't appreciate the greatness of Tzva HaGanali Yisrael, that God vouchsafed us an army that is the per capita, the most powerful in the world after the Holocaust, that's what he means Pirud. That's what he means Chilul Hashem. But the Rav Kook would say, everyone has to think alike, look alike, dress alike, chas v'chalila. He was very good friends with the Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld.
So not that he would say that, but that the ultimate goal in like 1,000 years would be that.
Never. That people should think alike. It goes against Selam Elohim. It goes against Rashi and Bracha, the Gemara I just quoted to you. Because the Rav look at the dignity of the human being is the ability to think, the ability to be individualistic, the ability to be different. The ability to be a human who has a mind. I'm a Litvak. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. That's how I understand it. I don't believe in brainwashing.
And I don't. Someone says, Ayasim according to Kol Mashiach in Kaddish. Right. I don't say it. So what? This is a mosaic. That's it.
I wind up saying it because I wind up with every minion I'm at, there's so many spots saying, well,
years ago, when we were young, if someone would say,
what do you mean young?
Young?
Yeah,
young.
Yeah.
Show, and they say, Jump,
yeah.
Up. The guy what are
you
talking
about? At the Kotel, at my minion, Friday night, there's about, he has to be about Shiva because I once saw a tourist taking a picture. He started yelling and screaming. God, calm down. You go over yourself, please. It's the Holy Sabbath. There's signs up now. But he got so upset. I don't know, maybe it's a fault with me. I didn't get so upset. It's a Goyish tourist. They're taking a picture of Jews davening. How have I? They're going to show it all over the world. By the way, I'm not joking. I had a Talmidah in Michala. I remember her so well. It's 30 plus years ago. She graduates, gets a master's from Columbia U. Second generation. Parents, their daughter got a master's. So, and father was well off. He arranges a trip for her to visit Spain and Portugal. That's her reward. She lives in Israel today. She's a good lady, must be a grandmother by now. Very lovely young lady. And she married afterwards, married someone younger. She was already, I could see her parents were biting their nails, because she was a Prospect Park girl, and to be with a master's and not be married is, a problem. Anyway, she gets on the plane, Iberian Airlines, and they give out the book of Iberian Airlines, the magazine, like every airline. She opens it up, a whole article in Israel, and there's a picture. Who is davening at the Kotel Friday night? Yours truly, with his son-in-law right next to him. And she came. I have it until today. I have the booklet. Rebbe, I can't escape you. Even on the plane, there's your picture haunting me. To reiterate, what did we do tonight, to today? Okay, we finished out Das Torah, we finished out Rabbi Lichtenstein, Rav Shach's talk. It's open to discussion. Who is right? Perhaps Aaron Rakefet allows his heart to run away with him, his emotion. But I learned in Litta, I understand Rav Shach. I feel bad for Rav Shach, because to make a mistake like Punim Upunim, he was the laughing stock of the secular press here. Rabbaran takes him to task. I understand Rabbaran well, but at least Rabitz Lepunovich's grandson came back totally belay v'nefesh as a result of the talk. That is Das Torah, but I don't want to leave you with a feeling that I have to hate, I have to have enmity. I can argue, I can be very strong, but I have to understand the Haredi world as well. And I began by telling you the story, and it's a fabulous story. It captures the difficulty people like us have with Rabarin, North Tel Aviv, Abby Kelman, his brother-in-law, and we'll continue on that. I showed you in halacha their differences, but halacha crystallizes in hashkafa. I introduced the concept of the Hegelian dialectics, and I want to continue to work on that theme.
Before you leave, not to think that it's only a matter of Medina and Israel and Rome. Starting with Samson Matthew Hirsch, going back,
we spoke
the concept of house from yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
The Haredim would not want to have anything to do with the Synagogue Council of America.
Oh, I agree.
The Orthodox rabbi, God forbid, he should be a member with a rabbinic body together with conservative before. In other words, the aim of our salvation, he did not want that. He wanted that the Orthodox should be part of the
scene. Right, no, not to say that you are quoting me, absolutely agreed. Okay, now, I just want to mention once again, if anyone wants this, you're welcome to it. Rav Yosef Halevi Soloveitchik, the son of Rabarin, is giving shiurim in Baba Kama, opposite Mamish in the Robinson Arch, opposite the Kotel. And it's twice a week. If anywhere, it's very worthwhile if you can go. He is an Adam Gadol. He's Bucky with his father's Torah and his uncle with my Rebbe's Torah. And he's a very fascinating individual. As I said, he has great sitkut in him, which at times in the modern world is good or not so good. If anyone wants this, they were giving this out all over Yerushalayim. It's the new Mishnah Brura with pictures. And I have to say, I was born before my time. You guys have it so good. It's unbelievable. This is a tshuva by Major General Harav Gatnavon, who was my dear friend, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, in the army. And it's a tshuva on fingerprints for identifying the dead, whether it has a concept of a simen muvhak. And this becomes very important when you can't identify the face already. It's many months after the person was killed, but you can still get fingerprints. This is a new article by Lopez Cardoza, and I tell you, with the philosophy, he reaches the level that everything of God and belief is absurd. Right. We live with absurdity. I don't know where the man is coming from, but once again, it's someone who grew up in the right-wing yeshiva and went into the big world.
It's very troublesome.
I know. It's beyond words. Now, and finally, a Talmud sent me this from the New York Times, and it's about baseball has its worshippers, and at NYU, you get credit, and it's unbelievable as the president of NYU, practicing believing Catholic, gives a course on baseball for credit. You look at the picture of the class. There you see a kid with a kippah sitting right in front of him. They love him. They love the class, and I wish someone would get in touch with him and give him or show him from the YU website how to download that Rebbe Shia eulogy for Joe DiMaggio. Boy, would he have material for his class as a believing individual. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya.